On Sunday, September 18th at 11 p.m., Sugar and My Bowl will take a closer look at The Mosaic Project, which was produced and arranged by drummer and composer Terry Lynn Carrington. We will also spend time with one of the contributors of the project, Nona Hendrix, and her latest release, Mutatis Mutandis. That's Sunday, September 18th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. Like the death, weak the strength. And you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, Sugar and My Bowl, and we're going to feature the Mosaic Project this evening. But first, I'd like to go back a few years ago with Terry Lynn Carrington. Let's see, it's March 26, 2007. Stay tuned.
But right now I'm working on kind of a sequel to the real life story.
Oh, okay.
It's called More to Say, Real Life Story, Next Gen.
Mm-hmm.
Next Generation. And probably maybe a couple of the same people, Patrice. Wow, is it only Patrice? But this CD has George Duke on it. And,
okay.
And Patrice, and Greg Sillingaines, Jimmy Haslip, Christian McBride, Kirk Whalum, Everett Harp, Dwight Sills, Anthony Wilson. Yeah, so this is like more of a smooth jazz, I guess you'd call it. Well, it's kind of a funky. It's, I don't know, it's just me.
Okay.
So it's still going to be eclectic in a sense. I mean, it'll have a few different things on there.
As well it should if it's music anyway. I mean, you know, why just be in a box?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, when should we expect to...
should come out in the summer.
Excellent.
It's on a new label called Sonic Portraits that I'm actually a partner in.
Oh.
And Robert Irving III, also, he's done the first project for it, and his record is actually a trio record, more straight ahead. And, you know, we're signing other people. And,
okay.
But, you know, I don't want to talk about it yet because I don't know... You know, until it's actually finalized, but my record will be the second release.
Okay. Jazz is the Spirit was, I think that was probably more international in the record label, in the, you know, distribution and, you know, what have you.
Well, yeah, it was a German label.
Right.
And definitely had more presence in Europe.
Right. And this one will be as well?
We're based here. No, we're based here. Because so,
okay.
I mean, the funky jazz thus is not... probably quite as prevalent. I just don't like the word smooth jazz. It probably would fit into that genre for Billboard or, you know, whatever labels that are needed for the industry. I kind of more call it groove jazz.
Okay. That certainly sounds better.
Smooth jazz, yeah.
Now, there are some things that, speaking of smooth, that I hear that are sort of jazzy R&B songs, you know,
right.
Covers.
Right,
so,
yeah, which is this? I mean, should that be called? I don't know. But, yeah, I have a cover of an Angie Stone song.
Oh, which one?
It's called Every Day.
No, we're working. You know we had to come back.
Welcome to Sugar and My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones, and our guests this evening will be Terry Lynn Carrington and Nona Hendricks. What you're listening to now is Every Day from More to Say, Next Gen by Terry Lynn Carrington. Stay tuned for more. Once again, this is Sugar and My Bowl. We'll be here until 1 a.m. If you have any questions, you can give me a call at 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900, or you can email me if something's gone too fast for you at sugar, S-U-G-A, and my bowl at gmail.com. Sugar and my bowl at gmail.com. Joyce Jones, and I am here with...
In the studio, it's Nona Hendricks.
And on the phone we have...
Terry Lynn Carrington.
Hi, ladies.
Hi.
Thank you for joining Sugar in My Bowl.
Thanks for having us.
As a matter of fact, by the time this comes to air, the first song I will have played will have been something from More to Say. What was the exact title of that?
More to Say, isn't it?
Well, there's more to that, isn't there?
More to Say, real life story, Next Gen.
Exactly.
A lot more.
Yes. we didn't get a chance to talk when that was out, so I just thought I'd play that, you know, just to let people know what you were doing in between our talking.
Oh.
And the Mosaic project.
Well, yeah, it was about 3 years prior to it, so I had a bit of time to work on Mosaic.
Well, it's also been a while since you've been on Sugar, so, you know, thank you for coming back.
Yeah, when was that?
Yeah, that was some time ago. So, the Mosaic Project, how did it come about?
Well, I think I started playing with Efron Spalding, and somehow I always felt like there was something kind of missing in my life. And when I thought that, I heard it kind of completed a circle of being really the first female bass player that I felt connected with. And I got a gig in Israel, the Red Sea Jazz Festival, with her and Jerry Allen and Tina Postman. And when we did that show, I think the point that I realized I wanted to do a recording with her. She was a big influence and a big part of what made me decide to do an all-female project.
How did Nona Hendricks get involved?
How did I get involved? Well, Terry wanted to re-record Transformation. And I met Terry at Berkeley when I went to do a Women in Rock. I think it was like a conference and a show. And so the re-recording of Transformation was how I came to be on Mosaic. And there's also two versions. There's the Transformation version and then Sisters on the Rise version, which is really interesting and different.
It's a bonus track.
I think when I also did a show with Terry in Chicago for an organization called Little Black Pearl. So I think we worked together a few times before Transformation came about.
Now, before you continue, what's Little Black Pearl?
Little Black Pearl is an organization founded by Monica Hayslip for young people in Chicago South Side to help them with alternative learning skills. And mainly it was to help children who, after school, to deal with issues to get them off the street, out of trouble, out of harm's way. And it's grown into a charter school.
The organization has helped kids on the South Side for, I think, about 15 years now.
Yes. She's done a great job. It's wonderful.
nations. Variations. Alternations. Mother Nature rules us all.
Transformation. That arrangement for transformation, how did you come up with that? I mean, I don't know. I don't even know if that's a fair question, but it's really so good. How did you do that?
God, I don't know how to answer that question. I think, if I were to be technical about it, I think I just thought about the key that it was in and tried to work in that key, like different shapes and that were based on some of the original parts of the song, but were added some tensions, you know, some dissonant harmonies to them. Over the years of playing with Wayne Shorter, I got to hear it a certain way, and the horn lines that I wrote on that were inspired by the way that he writes.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, I don't know, maybe a lot of people wouldn't necessarily see the connection of Nona and Transformation with Wayne Shorter, but that one melodic line, I guess it was synthesizer on the original recording.
I was just thinking about
Wayne.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
But in my head, I could hear Wayne Shorter playing that, you know,
right.
Soprano. And then when I heard that, then I could also hear something that he might write with that, you know. So that's probably how it started. And then just some other harmonies that could work. I think it was in the key of E, right? So some other harmonies could work around it.
E flat, but yeah.
E flat, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, close.
Close, very close.
Nona, how did you feel singing it in that style?
I felt great, you know, because I'd been singing the song for so long, and it was really nice to have a different bed on which to, you know, build.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you encouraged me to write another verse, I think. Is there another verse?
Yes,
another verse.
Yeah, like, you know, to make it, you know, to bring it full circle to today.
Yes.
I thought it would be great to have a new verse. I thought that was really cool. I won't say that's my favorite verse, but they're all my favorite. I really like the new verse.
Oh, good.
By the way, could you say a couple of lines at the beginning of the new verse?
The new verse?
Yeah. I know.
No, I didn't.
I really think.
Oh.
Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, sometimes you
what? I can't remember.
Some comma of fate.
Oh, right, yes,
what
yes.
What goes around.
Standing up or falling
around,
down.
From beginning to end.
Yes.
We all are born. To lose or win, rose to a thorn.
Yes, you know the lyrics.
Standing up or falling down.
Yes.
Silence
always
leads to sound.
Oh, right.
Oh, excellent.
Very good, Terry.
Yay!
You get a B plus.
Well,
thank God she was here.
I don't get better than a B plus.
You get a B. Well, you know. Okay, right. An A.
A minus. Okay, thanks.
I'm pretty big on B pluses rather than A minus. But
see, I was one of those students in school that had to get A's.
Oh, okay. Well, A minus then. Because I would have been a D on the lyric. I mean, it was really, you know, different. I mean, I had to hear the, you know, the dissonance in the horns to be able to, you know, and hear it in a way that it felt not like my ears would, you know, my head sort of always goes sideways when I hear things that are slightly odd to me. And, but now it's how I hear it. It's very interesting that, you know, even as, you know, you and Terry were thinking about the original line, I now hear the line the way it is. So it's really, it's nice to be able to do something, you know, in a different setting. Because I am pretty much, I'm improvisational in how I perform or sing. So it's not. It's always interesting to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
With all the arrangements on this CD, which would be Transformation, Michelle, Simply Beautiful, and I Got Lost in His Arms, with all those arrangements, the big thing is, to me, they work best when the melody is really consistent with the original melody. And a lot of times, jazz singers tend to really change the melody a lot, which I think works better sometimes with the original harmony because you're interpreting the melody over the original chord changes. But I tend to change all the chords pretty much, you know, a lot, most of the chords of a piece, and I change them really specifically to the melody. So that's the only tricky part, you know, to me, is trying to, especially get the jazz singers to stick closer to the melody, because my arrangements to me sound better when the melody remains very close to the original.
Yeah, also the rhythm of Transformation also. I mean, it's in the same sort of pocket as the original, but it's different.
Right.
You know, and on the other songs as well. I mean, it feels different. It feels more sensuous, more, there's a lot more colors. You know, the original was electronic and kind of straight ahead, funky, but in an electronic way.
Right.
And this is much more earthy and more organic and all those things because it's, you know, real musicians playing, although there were some real musicians on the original. This is much, you feel and you hear it, it breathes, which is great.
Yeah, but this one won't get played as much.
Oh, goodness.
No, see what happens when you go.
No. Somebody told me they heard it. They were in Atlanta somewhere, and this is the third person told me they were somewhere and they heard it playing,
mm-hmm.
and they went, That's Nona doing like a jazz? What is that? You know?
You did more, however, Nona, on the Mosaic Project than Transformation.
I did some writing of lyrics, and I don't even know if there's any melody involved, but I, on other songs.
So, Terry Lynn, you've got quite a roster of vocalists on here. You've pretty much worked with all of them.
The idea for the record really became a personal statement about the people that I've worked with over the course of my career. I really kind of wanted to make this personal as well as a tribute to all these great female instrumentalists and a celebration of all this talent. But it really did revolve around my relationships and people that were important to me over the course of my career. So it kind of documents a big part of my life. Actually, very cool aspect of it really made it really personal. Diane Reeves is one of my longest friends, and the founder of Wilson and Jerry Allen I've been playing with for nearly 20 years. The only person I didn't really know very well was Gretchen Carlotta, but the rest of them, that was, really people I've been playing with, Ingrid Jensen, Patrice Rushen, people I've known for a long time. Actually, I met Patrice same time period I met Diane Reeves when I was 10, but I stayed in touch with Diane Reeves throughout all those years, and I didn't really reconnect with Patrice until 10 years later or so. My son was named Short, about 11 years later, and we both recorded on Jackson's Lane called Joyrider, and then that's how we rekindled our relationship.
So Gretchen Pallotta, how did you decide to include Gretchen Pallotta? She's an exciting voice, talent, so.
Yes, she was somebody that I heard a lot about from Herbie and Wayne Shorter because she was involved with the Monk Institute, the Thelonious Monk Institute of Jazz, and they are both on the board of that organization. So I've heard about her, but I had never really heard her sing until she was on Esperanza's recording, Chamber Music Society, that I was on, and I just fell in love with her voice.
She does two cuts, doesn't she?
Well, no, she really sings I Got Lost in His Arms.
Right.
She sings an intro to Michelle, this three lines or so.
Right,
of
right.
Michelle, by herself.
Michelle, my belle, these are words that go together well. I love you. I love you, I love you.
We'll go into an instrumental version of that. But she has such a distinct quality to her voice. When I wrote that arrangement, I was really inspired by some of her recordings and things that I heard. When I wrote it, it was for her.
We inhabit our histories, and our histories inhabit us. A prison system with 2.4 million people behind bars is a terrible specter of slavery. And if indeed we can say that slavery was abolished, we cannot deny that it still haunts us. The challenges of the past are challenges of the present and challenges of the future. Poverty, racism, xenophobia, homophobia. Freedom itself is constantly transforming. Echoes of the past and reverberations of the future.
Freedom will flow the air of your-
WBAI, New York.
You decided to also include Bernice Johnson Regan's Echo.
Yes.
And you opened with a commentary by Angela Davis.
Angela and Bernice are old friends of mine as well, and Diane being on that track, that really has special meaning to me, as well as Sheila being on the track. But those three women really had a big influence on me as far as, you know, my identity. And I don't know, I just felt it really special to bring them all together. I mean, when I was arranging Echo, actually before I even arranged it, I asked Diane if she would sing that song, because I wanted to include it on the CD, and I was just starting to arrange it. And she used to like that song as well, so she said yes before I even did the arrangement. And then when I did it and played it for her, she was, you know, very excited about it. I originally saw Angela's introduction as a transition between Transformation and Echo.
Mm-hmm.
But then the order of the CD changed. But she uses the word transformation in her intro,
mm-hmm.
and she uses the word Echo in her intro.
I see.
But it changed, so maybe we'll really get that little detail.
Well, I got to tell you, hearing Diane Reeves sing that song mm-hmm. is just chills. Chills. It just, the first time I listened to the project was on an exercise bike. So when I was listening to that, I kept writing, but I was like, it was like I was on a journey.
Mm.
You know, it was, she sent me somewhere, mm. you know, just deep. It was really incredible hearing that song.
She's fantastic.
She actually wrote a new verse for that, too.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Yeah. The last verse is new. I can't remember it.
What is
okay.
it? I get a D on that one.
That's okay. You did indicate that it was the last one, so that's something people can listen out for. Now, I mentioned that I was on the exercise bike, and Dee Bridgewater was my guest recently, and we talked about Soul Talk, which was co-written by Nona Hendrix.
Mm-hmm.
And Dee Bridgewater was talking about how challenging it was for her to sing because of the time signatures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the thing that I do.
That's a problem with Terry.
No, I wrote it in 4/4 first, and then it just felt too regular, and I decided to change it, but I didn't tell Dee Dee or play her the new arrangement until we got to the studio.
Ooh.
So she heard a much simpler version of the song when she learned it, and then when we got to the studio, it was really totally different. And but the melody was the same, but the time signature was a lot different, and it went from 4/4 to 11/4.
Yeah.
And, with a 12/8 feel behind that, so it was weird, you know. But,
just a little.
I guess you could do it.
Well, I keep mentioning that I was on the exercise bike because, you know,
did you fall off?
Yeah, I practically did because I had this tempo going, and then all of a sudden, like, huh? But it's a wonderful, wonderful song. It's a wonderful arrangement. And what was your contribution to Soul Talk, Nona?
Lyrics based on the melody. And I think you sent me the entire melody, right, Terry?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And don't ask me what the lyrics are.
No, well,
please.
People...
Oh, I know that lyric.
Do you? Oh, good.
People will hear it when they hear the song again, because I played it during, you know, when Dee Dee Bridgewater was a guest, so I'll play it one more time.
Okay, good. I'll listen to the show.
Okay.
So I can know them as well.
that.
Tommy, you have to learn your own lyrics.
I write so many lyrics, I don't, you know, I kind of try to live in the present. I will, I'll go look at them tonight.
Okay.
Yes.
Jazz Standard.
Yes, 27th and 28th of June.
That's right. That's right. September 27th and 28th, mm-hmm. Jazz Standard. And Nona, you're going to be there on the 27th?
Yes, 27th and 28th, I think.
I thought Gretchen was going to be there on the 28th.
Yes.
We'll both be there on the 28th.
So okay. It's just me on the 27th. Is anybody else coming?
I don't know. No. I really don't know yet.
Okay.
If anybody else shows up, it'll be more of a surprise.
Okay.
So there's special guests.
Okay.
No, I'm not sure if there will be one or not, but I might try for that.
I'll just act surprised. I'll act surprised anyway. Oh, Terry Lynn's here. Wow.
So Carmen Lundy. You worked with Carmen Lundy in the past?
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I used to drive her to gigs when we lived in New York together. We were there at the same time in the 80s.
You were her driver.
Wow.
Or that was one of the things you did.
No, I was everybody's driver because I had a Ford LTD.
Oh, my God.
Station wagon. I had to carry drums, so I had to have a car, you know.
Ah, okay. Yeah, as
most people
as
in New York don't, so I was the one who ended up dropping people off and picking them up a lot.
So how was it working with Carmen Lundy this time, this go-around?
Well, I mean, this particular track, I actually really took her voice from her own record.
Oh.
Solamente or something like that. She did a record where she played all the instruments, and she did a very, very sparse just piano voice and also a little bass version of Show Me a Sign. So I just EQ'd it so that you don't hear most of the instruments, you just hear her voice.
Oh.
And it has also a sound of like a, I don't know, AM radio sound. And then we played on top of that, actually. It was almost like a sample of her, or a remix.
Oh, my.
Of her original recording. She did not re-sing it.
Oh, okay. The little tricks that happened in the studio. It's just great.
Yeah, I just love that piece that she wrote. And when I heard it, I just knew I wanted to do something.
You have one of my friends on this recording, Mimi Jones.
Oh, all right.
How'd you wind up working with Mimi? How did Mimi wind up being a part of this project?
Well, let's see. I had heard Mimi about a month before that recording date in D.C. She had played the Randy Williams Jazz Festival at the Kennedy Center. And I did some kind of workshop with some students there, and she was backing them, like playing with them. And, you know, I just loved her feel. You know, it just felt really good. And we had already tracked the record with Esperanza, and I had a last-minute idea to go back and do that ballad. So I basically added the song, and the time period I added the song, Esperanza was gone. So I just got the idea to call Mimi, because I just heard her, and she sounded really good, and she just really played that song so beautiful.
To all that heard the call,
decided to make it a tribute to Tina Marie. So it was a real personal song for me because she was a friend and I miss her. And I was really pleased with the intimacy of the track with me and Helen Sung.
Helen Sung, another person that you worked with, or you just liked her sound?
No, I had a few gigs with her, a couple of trio gigs with her and Esperanza and myself. And she was another one, actually, that Vivian Lane talked about a lot. And we played at the White House together, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, we just would run into each other. And Helen was somebody that I always felt like I knew, you know, like one of those people you feel like was a long-time friend, an old friend.
Mm-hmm.
Right from the beginning. So, and I enjoyed the way she played. I mean, I have to say, one of my favorite solos on the entire CD is her solo on Crayola, Esperanza's song.
Right. So we've sort of been, you've been mentioning Esperanza Spalding, and we've sort of been talking around her, name pops up. How did you wind up working together, period?
Well, she was teaching at Berkeley still when I got back to Berkeley and I started teaching there. So the president of the school, when I got there, he invited me to his house for dinner, and he wanted me to meet her, and she was there, and I believe it was the first time I met her. But he also sent me a CD of some of their best students performing. Before I started teaching there, she was on that CD, her and Christian Scott, and some other people. And that sounded good, you know, it sounded good, but it did not show her abilities to the degree, you know, that I know them to be now. And then I had a little show at Berkeley first year I got there, clinic performance, and somebody suggested her to play. I felt great, yeah, it was the opportunity to play with her, to hear about her, and we did, and I just remember the first thing I was really impressed with. It was a really difficult little bassline. It wasn't just something I wrote. It was something that Adam Rogers wrote. But we had done it on a recording. You know, I told him, you don't have to play that. Cause, you know, we don't really even need all that. You know, I was trying to make things a little simpler because there was no time to rehearse. And she was like, wait, let me see. And she just played it. And I was like, wow, okay. That's when I knew her technique was kind of off the charts. And we played that day. And then we did another gig. I think that gig in Israel that I mentioned earlier, and that's when I really realized how much I enjoyed playing with her. And then she played with me in Japan at the Blue Note in Japan, and then that really sealed the deal for me. Then she asked me to play on her record, Chamber Music Society, and I started doing gigs with her. Now I'm currently working with her on her new CD, which is called Radio Music Society.
Okay.
From the chamber to the radio.
Now I'm just going to read the lists of women who's on the Mosaic Project: Jerry Allen, Dee Dee Bridgewater, Annette Cohen, Angela Davis, Sheila E., Nona Hendrix, Ingrid Jensen, that's the trumpeter?
Mm-hmm.
And Mimi Jones, Carmen Lundy, now you're going to have to help me out here, Chaya Yin Carol Ma?
Yes.
Hey.
Very good.
Haley Niswanger?
Niswanger.
Niswanger. Now, who is Haley Niswanger?
She's a student that I met at Berkeley, and very promising talent. She has a CD out now as well.
And what does she play?
Alto. Well, she primarily plays alto and some soprano, but on this CD, she plays flute.
Oh, okay.
Because I needed some flute parts, and a big part of, you know, the Mosaic Project was to include young women, you know, just women of all ages and backgrounds, and yeah, I just wanted it to be broad. And so I have a couple of people that I met that I thought are very talented at Berkeley, which is Haley and Shay Rose.
Gretchen Pallotto, Tinke Postma?
Tinica.
Tinica Postma. Actually, weren't you at the Blue Note with her last year?
Yeah,
and I think you and Nona were conspiring at that moment on the Mosaic Project.
Oh, really?
Yes. That's true.
You guys have a better memory than us.
Yes, true.
Well, I was grooving on your playing, but I noticed you're conspiring at the same time.
Okay, good.
And Diane Reeves, of course, Patrice Rushen, Esperanza Spalding, Helen Sung, Linda Taylor. Who's Linda Taylor?
Guitarist.
Okay. And Cassandra Wilson. Cassandra Wilson.
Last but not least.
Yes. Indeed.
And she sings an Al Green song.
Simply Beautiful?
Yes, Simply Beautiful. And we like Cassandra Wilson.
Yeah. That version is extremely different. So I just think if you're going to cover a song like that, yeah, you can't do it to me remotely like the original. So that version is so different. But again, it works with the melody. And I knew it was something that Cassandra could sink her teeth into. So.
Cool.
If I gave you my love, I tell you what I do. I expect a whole lot of love out of you. Huh. If I gave you my love, I tell you what I do. I'd expect a whole lot of love out of you. Got to be good to me. Well, I'm gonna be good to you. Things you and I could do. What about the way you love me?
Well, it's been a pleasure going through the Mosaic Project with you, Terry.
Thank you.
Thanks
for having me. I know you want to continue talking to Lauren.
Yes. Thank you so much for being on Sugar again. All right.
All right, good.
Thank you.
All right, Mama. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. Okay. All right. Well, the first hour was spent checking out the Mosaic Project. By the way, we got a ticket giveaway. That jazz standard performance on the 27th and 28th of the Mosaic Project. Give me a call, 212-209-2900, and you can win a pair, one for the 27th and one for the 28th. Someone, well, two someones can win a pair. 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900 for your chance to win a pair of tickets to check out the Mosaic Project when it visits the Jazz Standard. All right, let's see what I've got here. I got an announcement. Tomorrow at St. Peter's. Where's my announcement? There it is. St. Peter's Church at 6 p.m. There will be a tribute to Billy Bang. Anyone who listened to the, I think it was the Spring Drive. Yeah, the Spring Drive. We did a Billy Bang special, and his birthday is the 20th, I believe. So tomorrow, September 19th, at St. Peter's Church, 619 Lexington Avenue at 54th Street. You can call 212-935-2200, 212-935-2200, or go to stpeters.org, stpeters.org, to find out more about the tribute to Billy Bang. And the phone be ringing. Let me go pick it up. I'll transition. Stay tuned. This is Sugar My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones. Stay tuned for more Nona Hendrix. Thank you, Terry Lynn Carrington. And thank you, Rick Noon of Concord Records. Everybody, just to let you know, those tickets are gone. Herbert and Joanne are the lucky people. Herbert and Joanne. Stay tuned for more Nona Hendrix, though. On Sugar and My Bowl on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Mentioned earlier how you live in the present.
I strive to live in the present.
Yes.
Yes.
So the idea of talking about your past.
Yes, that is not one of my favorite topics. Mainly because, and actually I said to Terry that I'd done my last interview, which obviously I didn't as I'm sitting here.
Right.
Because it was just, you know, after so many years of talking about my whole history over and over again, over and over again. And I think sometimes when you have a project out, it's just a constant sort of talking about yourself that at some point you just want to, you know, just sort of gag on you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at that point sort of like gagging on me and just did not really want to talk about me again for a while.
Okay. So that while has passed, right?
Yes, it's passed, and I think what really helped me out of it was by doing things like Facebook and Twitter and things like that, social networking, because then I had things, it was kind of in the present all the time.
Right.
There was very little to do with, because most of the people who were finding me knew, so I started becoming more communicative again, because it was about what I was doing now.
Right.
Yes.
Sunshine walking up with my hand. It's just that I got another point of view. There is a left and right. Please don't take that attitude. Now who's reflecting a view? I control the multitude.
I do have to say, for anyone who isn't aware, that Nona Hendrix was one third of the group LaBelle.
Yeah, and you know, and I, in retrospect, I now know that it's something, because it's history, and there are a lot of young people who don't know, and if they don't hear, if their parents don't tell them, or their grandparents don't tell them, there are a lot of people who, you know, somebody who's 12 or someone's just discovering music.
Mm-hmm.
Even earlier age, they just wouldn't know. You become lost in the cracks. So
exactly.
I've gotten better.
Yay.
Yes.
Because that's actually how I feel about this show. I like to introduce people who may not know to
yes.
artists, you
oh,
know,
good.
What they're doing.
That's good. I'm glad, I'm glad that you do that, because, you know, it is important to, otherwise we lose our history, which
exactly.
is something I've always kind of complained about or said was important, that, you know, as a people, we tend to create things and move on
mm-hmm.
and let other people co-opt them, and then they're no longer ours.
Right.
And so I can't have it both ways, can I?
That's right.
No. No, I can't.
to sort of skip past some stuff, you're teaching at NYU.
Yes, I did for the winter semester. 2010 was my first time teaching in a real sort of like teaching way.
What were you teaching?
A course that I created, I wrote the syllabus for, called Stagecraft and the Art of Performance, and teaching people about the history of performance for mainly in contemporary music, and then working with the students in a club space to actually work through some of the things on stage physically, how to present yourself, how to hold an audience. Mm-hmm. And it was really much more about holding an audience and understanding why you're there, what you're sharing, and who your employer is, which is the audience, not the club owner, not your manager, not your agent. The people who pay to come and see you, they're the people that you're there to entertain, and what you need to do to make sure that they leave satisfied.
And I was thinking about, you know, how you are an amazing entertainer live.
Thank you.
You know, I mean, you definitely hold the crowd. You know, it's like everything you do is, no one wants to turn away.
Well, I learned from the best, better known as Patti LaBelle. And the 17 years of performing with Patti and Sarah, and also, you know, performing on the same stage with some of the best artists over the last 30 years in music and other areas, but specifically music, you know, going back to James Brown, touring with him and Otis Redding. And,
did you really?
Yeah, yes. No, LaBelle, we opened, it was just us and James Brown and a comedy duo, Pigmy Markham.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, very funny. Here comes the law. And we toured and opening for James Brown, and, you know, if you're opening for James Brown, and also opening for the Rolling Stones, I mean, that you really have to learn how to hold an audience when you're opening for people like that who, you know, everybody's come to see them.
Right.
And here you come. You know, it's like, oh, okay, so time for popcorn or something. And so, you know, opening for people like that, and then, you know, playing the Apollo Theater for the amount of years that we performed there with the Drifters and all the great artists, Jackie Wilson, people like that, you learn to perform.
Were you their backing singer, or you opened for them?
We opened. We were. This is the Bluebells. We
okay.
were called the Bluebells at the time.
Right.
We
became
Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells.
Okay.
Because of a very famous dance group in Europe. When we went to Europe, we could not, the club or the organizations that ran the artists, the license for clubs, the famous dance troupe called the Bluebells, they pretty much owned that name.
Oh.
So we added Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells, and then LaBelle.
Okay. Wow.
Yes.
There's just so much I don't know.
Yeah, well, yes.
So glad you're talking.
Yes. So that's where I learned what I shared at this class and what I was able to, when they asked me to create a syllabus to teach performance, I thought, I don't know, how do you do that? You know, it's a physical thing.
Right.
But I was able to put it down. And a lot of it involved on the lecture day showing what I felt were some of the great artists going from their beginning to when they really hit their prime in terms of being great performers, and why they are great performers, all very different individual, and then how they're able to, why their audiences keep coming back with or without a hit record. So it was very important to get that across to young people who think it's about being successful for the fame, for the money, for the, and that that will take care of the rest of it, when it doesn't. It really is, if you are good with just you on a stage with a light bulb, the rest of it will come.
That's for sure. It's not for everybody.
Well,
it's definitely not for everybody.
No, that's what I try to, not so much teach, but to uncover in each of the students, to uncover the real art and the core of them, what they had, what they bring, because each student is different, every artist is different, but underneath, in the center, there is something that they do that nobody else does.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it becomes a big success or not, that is the thing that you are given to bring to an audience.
Now, to fast forward.
Yes.
You
see, I like talking about the present.
Yes. That's why I'm moving forward.
Okay.
Tell me the name of your latest release.
It is Mutatis Mutandis, which is a Latin term for a legal term, and it's inserted in contracts stating the names and places may change or will change, but things basically will remain the same. Lawyer speak.
Yes. Well, on that subject, I was thinking of your backing vocalist.
Oh. Which one?
Well, see, that's... I was thinking of Keith. Yes.
You mean Big Mouth.
Did you say Kiki?
Kiki Hawkins is the other.
Oh, okay.
Singer. She's the... my backing singer has been with me for quite a while. Okay. And Keith, who I call Mr. and Mrs. because they fight all the time, like a married couple. But Big Mouth, Keith... has been with me for quite a while. It's wonderful.
They seem very constant right now.
Yes, they are. They'll be with me on the next shows coming up, my future shows.
Excellent. I really enjoy them. I saw Keith with Morley.
Oh, okay, yes.
Yeah, he sang with her.
Keith is a wonderful voice. Both he and Kiki, they're both, and, you know, Kiki's a great dynamic performer,
mm-hmm.
and Keith is, you know, like... He really is a character,
mm-hmm.
and he has great stage presence and just brings everything to the stage, whether it's him up front or whether it's him doing backups or, you know, and they both, I love them. They have a great spirit on stage.
Mm-hmm. Your band. Who is in your band?
My band, Ronnie Drayton, who's been with me for, since 1980.
Wow.
So a long time.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, all of them. All of my musicians have been with me a long time. Trevor Gale, who is a big wig at CSAC, and Warren McCray,
mm-hmm.
bass player. Trevor plays drums, Warren plays bass, and
Ronnie plays
guitar.
Okay.
Left hand upside down guitar.
Oh, like Jimi Hendrix.
Yes, very like Jimi Hendrix. And it's the Queens Connection.
Meaning?
They're the Queens Connection. They're all from Queens.
Okay.
And you get one Queens musician, you get all Queens musicians. Because they eat a certain food, they talk a certain way, and they are funky.
Okay.
And Etienne is the non-Queens, you know, the rhythm section, bass, drums, and guitar are Queens-based.
Okay.
And Etienne is actually from, he's Dutch and Cameroonian, I think.
Oh, okay.
But he's got the funk.
Does he go by one name?
His keyboard. Etienne Stadvik.
Oh, okay.
Is his last name.
Okay.
And I always spell it wrong, so he's always correcting me. But that's how you pronounce it, I think. And Etienne is just a great keyboard player. He plays from jazz to funk. But it's his own thing. It's not. He's not, like, stuck
mm-hmm.
in a place with music. And he's very talented. They're all just wonderful.
Well, that's something that you can say about yourself, that musically you're not stuck.
No. That's sometimes a problem, but, you know, I like exploring.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's also wonderful to listen to as well, you know, your exploration.
Oh, good.
Because you never know where you're going to go.
No, this is true. I don't even know.
So, okay, you'll have to repeat the title again.
Mutatis Mutandis.
Mutatis Mutandis.
Mm-hmm.
It was released this year.
Yes, self-released.
Ah.
But I'm talking to a couple of labels about going through them, and there's interest that I, especially for Europe, to help get it out to a wider audience. But I just released it myself because I'm not with a label, haven't been for years. And but I haven't released anything for probably about 20 years. And thought maybe I should. It's about time. I've just been recording, and not releasing. And so I decided to do that. And just rather than trying to go through the whole thing of going to labels and see if they were interested and da-da-da-da, and then telling me I was too old or not young enough or not the right color for the music I'm making or too colored for the music I'm making, any of that stuff, I thought, okay, you know what, just do it yourself.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you believe in yourself, put the finance into yourself and put the time into yourself and put it out there. Because fans have been going like, so are you going to release something anytime soon?
Right.
So I did.
Especially after having seen you on stage somewhere do your thing. It's like, okay, when are we going to get something?
Yes. People were like, you know, let's give love a try. When are we going to get a copy of that? When are we going to get a copy of that? So.
You want to kill me? Down and drown in the sea of love from blindness. Oh, we can do it if we own it.
As a matter of fact, that's number one on my list of things that I like on that release. This is definitely a WBAI release. You know, there's a song on there, was it Oil on the Water?
Oh, yeah.
That is definitely a WBAI song. It's WBAI / Pacifica.
Okay.
And the Ballad of Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah.
The man on the radio can hardly catch his breath. Describing my life, describing my death. This was a disgust, spewing hate and mistrust. He feels he's above the law. This is the battle. The name of the son of a lawyer from the shore of his state. He rose to speak to infamy and hate. Was it the silver spoon on a velvet bed? Rivers and prestige dancing in his head. He feels he's about to law. This is the battle of Rush Limbaugh.
I had to. He was just getting to me, like, to a point where I couldn't even say his name anymore without fuming. Especially over the time that Barack Obama was running for president and, you know, the things that he and Bill O'Reilly would come out with and some of the other people on, they will be named nameless station, and the what's the other one? I can't remember. Glenn Beck and people like they have their ballots coming soon. I'm still working on Michelle Bachmann. You know, and just they were just driving me crazy with the ability that they had to reach people,
yeah,
and using the airways to just spew insanity,
mm-hmm,
and incense, and you know, really inflame people,
mm-hmm,
and tell lies.
Right.
So. Yeah, I thought I'd look up Rush Limbaugh and see much more about, see where he came from, what was his story.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at him, he's, you know, always talking sort of being like the proletariat, you know, man of the people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, this man comes from, you know, upper class, you know, wealth,
mm-hmm,
swimming pool, home,
wow,
you know, and is a multimillionaire himself, mm-hmm, now. And I'm thinking, you know, how can you possibly take that stand, and especially the real right-wing stand that you take,
mm-hmm,
when you are really establishment yourself.
Right.
And you are, that's a false, you know, idol. He's got clay feet, and
mm-hmm,
so I wanted to, and what I wrote in the Ballad of Rush Limbaugh is really his story.
Mm.
You know, that he was born to these this lawyers, his family, and when people hear it, they'll hear,
yeah, his story.
His story.
Yeah. I also like how you used minor keys for that. I mean, I like minor keys generally.
Yes.
And I do.
So do I. But he needed really, if there was another even lower minor key, I would have used that, like triple flat. I just had the right word I was writing at the time.
Right. I like this recording. I just do. I like it a lot. And I actually just recently heard it, so I wasn't even aware that it was around. But there's one period that I have to say that I really enjoyed. I mean, I enjoy many periods, mm-hmm, of you musically. But when you were doing backing vocals with the Talking Heads.
Oh. Yes.
Oh,
great time. I've done backing vocals, not a lot, but, you know, for different people, friends, and some, you know, a lot of times when I'm writing with people, then I end up singing on whatever they're recording.
Oh, okay.
Or if I'm producing, I end up, you know, you're in the room, go sing.
Oh.
You know, so I end up singing.
Uh-huh.
But it's great because it's really, for me, it stretches me and gives me opportunity to find, you know, based on where they're going and how they're hearing something,
mm-hmm.
it challenges me to, it's like with Mosaic. I mean, it's a challenge for me to work in the midst of a jazz setting with all these great jazz singers. You know, I had to stretch myself even to write the lyrics based on the melody that doesn't come sort of naturally to me in my knowledge of music and what I've done over the years. So I like being challenged and seeing what I find, whether it becomes something that fits within the traditional range of what I'm doing. And I'm usually much more interested if I can break the mold and find something new.
Yeah.
That's what I'm always seeking.
So tell me about Blue.
Oh, Blue. Right, the theater side of me. Yes. My friend Charles Randolph Wright, a Broadway baby. He was in Dream Girls in the chorus with Felicia Rashad, who is the lead actress in Blue, or was the lead actress in Blue. Charles I met through someone else, and Charles is always like doing shows and creating things, one woman, one man shows. And he said to me, you know, my album Skin Diver. He was saying that should be, you know, it's musical, what you're saying, blah, blah, blah. He loved it. And I was like, I hate musicals. What are you talking about? Leave me alone. And I think if you say that to Charles, it becomes like a challenge. Like, okay, I'm going to fix you. So little by little, he wheeled me into writing music for theater on all kinds of projects, all kinds of things. And Blue, he was working on it. Why I said yes to Blue is because it was a play with music and not really writing a musical. It's not what I do.
Mm-hmm.
But I understood the different styles of music that he wanted this artist to go through, because it was very similar to how I go through different genres of music. And over time. So that, and it's a wonderful play. I mean, it's still being shown around the country, different places are picking up and doing it. But it's an African-American experience that, for me, some friends of mine went to someone specifically from Armenia, and he was witnessing an African-American woman who wore furs and was very upper society in the South, and went through every night cooking all these like Japanese dinners for her family, and all these different Indian food, and they would dress in the, you know, style, because they were, this is her way, because she was a fashion model.
Yeah.
And they owned a funeral home, and they were, you know, that black family in
mm-hmm.
the community.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone said, you know, are there black people like this?
Wow.
You know, and I was like, what do you mean? And this is like an educated person.
Mm-hmm.
I was really shocked. And so it was, the story goes from that side of it to the son finding out he's illegitimate, and, you know, so you have the other side, the very sort of stark drama on the other side of what it does to the family, the secrets that are kept.
It's quite a bit to write for.
Yeah, it's you know, and I was writing the music for the, she had a brief affair, the character that Felicia plays with, she leaves her husband because she finds she's too constrained in this sort of conservative way that she's living, and she goes back to Chicago to be a fashion model in Ebony, and she meets this singer, and you know, he's a gypsy and kind of leaves, and she goes back, her husband takes her back, and they raise the son, the second son, as his. But the son is always interested in music, and she's always playing this music by this particular singer.
That's an interesting piece. I'm sorry I didn't get to see that.
Yes, I think it'll come back, and Felicia Rashad is just so brilliant in it. And Diane Carroll plays the grandmother. Felicia plays the mother. It was just a great cast. And it was in Washington, D.C. It played in New York here. It's been in Pasadena and California. Mm-hmm. And lots of other places around the country.
I hope it does come back.
It's really good. It's a good play.
Yeah.
And then I did another play with Charles called Oak and Ivy.
Oh.
About two of the black poets of turn of the century. Names are going out of my head now. It was a female poet, and she was married to a black male poet. He was a poet laureate in Washington, D.C. And that was writing classical music, which was another stretch for me.
Wow.
Yes, because it was, you know, early 20th century, and so it was set in that period, so it needed, you know, classical music.
Where did you go in order to bring that in to you?
Well, you know, I have always loved classical music.
We're talking about European classical people, just so you know,
yes,
to clarify.
European classical, yes. And there was a classical, African-American classical musician. And he was my inspiration because he was writing classical music at the same time that they were writing poetry. Mm. And I worked with, I know Judith Castleberry.
Yes.
And another African-American woman, violinist. And I think they were called the Four String Players, African-American women. And they were the core. So I wrote quartets.
Oh, okay.
With the exception of some piano pieces that were a part of it. And I just wrote from what my idea of classical music from an African-American perspective in the early 20th century.
Interesting. Was that ever recorded?
It was recorded.
Oh,
it's never released.
Oh. Actually, I would like to know about, oh, come on. You know. Writer, woman. She's no longer here. Little white girl.
Little white girl.
Oh, dark hair. She wasn't a great singer. Laura Nero.
Oh, she was a great singer. In her own way.
Yes. She was expressive.
Well, also her interpretation, you know, how she interpreted what she was writing as a songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I don't know whether you ever heard New York Tenderberry.
Yes.
Come on, people. Come on, children. Come on down to the glory river. I'm gonna watch you.
So yes, expressive would be the word.
Yes.
She didn't have a brilliant voice, but she was a singer-songwriter.
Yes.
Laura.
Yes, Laura Nero.
And the Gonna Take a Miracle album.
Yes. What was it like working with her?
Magical. Mm. You know, Laura kind of lived in a magical world, and, you know, she and Patty were great friends. She loved Patty's fried chicken and potato salad and, you know, fried corn, and we'd just get together, cook and eat and sing. like black people. And that's what we did.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and she sort of became, you know, a fourth LaBelle, and she would come with us on the road, and we would, after shows, go back to hotel and sing or cook or, you know, and just pretty much, we spent a lot of time together. And that, you know, how you sort of fall in with people and you seem to always be with them and they're with you.
Yeah.
And recording Gonna Take a Miracle album came about by that, sitting around the piano singing at Laura's apartment and just singing all the songs that she loved from Motown, you know, Jimmy Mack, and she wanted to record it. And
it's gonna take a miracle. Yes, it's gonna take a miracle to make me love someone new. Oh, they're crazy for you. Oh, didn't you know it would be so?
She asked us to come and do it, and Gamble and Huff produced, and that whole sort of Philadelphia feel was added to it.
You born?
New Jersey. Chunking.
Oh, okay.
Why?
Well, I never knew.
Oh, okay.
I thought I'd ask.
Across the river, a little south.
Where were your parents?
Florida and Georgia.
Okay.
The southerners.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I had pegged you for either being southern or further southern.
Further southern. Like another country?
Caribbean. Caribbean.
No. My heritage is Ethiopian, American Indian,
mm-hmm.
and some Caucasian got in there somewhere at
right.
some point,
right.
and African, you know, Ethiopian, that's what I am.
Have you ever been to Ethiopia?
No.
Okay.
And, you know, Ethiopian people always speak to me in Fola.
Yeah.
There's this guy who I know who I see quite often, and he recently started writing down phonetically how to say things in Ethiopian. And, you know, people speak to me in Ethiopian, and I sort of go, no, just a stupid old American here.
So. Oh, okay. You had mentioned how you are sort of tied into social media, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, Twitter, and, you know, Facebook, and
mm-hmm.
I'm actually on your list.
Oh,
and,
okay. Good.
But your website.
Yes.
How do people know that you're doing things?
So my website, Facebook, or I tweet, you know. I haven't been tweeting lately because I've been doing music.
Right.
And I let my friends know. I sent out a tweet saying, you know, I'm going under.
Yeah.
Music has called me, and I
right.
need to get back to it because you can get lost, you know, sucked into the quicksand of tweeting.
Yeah.
Or Facebook or
yeah.
any of them.
Yeah.
And so I just said, okay, I got to take a break. And I was going to tweet last night, but I didn't. Because this is at 3 o'clock in the morning, and if I started, it would be 5 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
But I have learned now that I can stop. I'll just send a tweet.
Okay.
You know, that's it. You know, so my website, and I do all of this myself.
Okay.
I created my website. I maintain it. I do all this stuff.
Did you load the MP3s?
Yeah.
Now, see, I need to know you. That's very nice.
So I do it, and there's another site that I use called Topspin, which is my own, for artists, their own store through which they can sell anything they want to sell. I can put things from my past as well as now, or T-shirts or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I want to sell, I can sell it to Topspin.
Okay.
And for fans who want something special, they can write to me and ask me for, you know, some of the art that I do, some of the other things that I do. I can send that to them.
Now, I did notice one thing, one of your recordings. It's a compilation. Transformation.
Oh.
It is out of print.
Yes.
Why? Is there any way to get this without, you know, selling, you know, your leg?
There are some that I have made myself, and
uh-huh.
I've been able to get to fans, but there's, I just have it with me. Somebody's just put out The Heat, which is on the CD.
Right.
And I'm sure, I think somebody will probably put out the compilation of the Transformation compilation that Razor and Ty did.
Yeah.
But sort of like my first CD record that
okay.
came out. So people are beginning to... It's something that I thought about doing myself, but it's a lot of work to do, and I tried to stay in the present, so I moved on to Matatus Matandis.
Okay.
And other people can deal with, you know, re-releasing whatever it is that I released before.
Okay. Thank you, Dota Hendrix, for...
You're welcome.
Coming into WBAI.
You're welcome. I haven't been here for a while, so thank you.
Time for us to get up out of here in a couple of minutes. Let me be really quick about this. Gosh, I hate talking over this. Like I said, this is my favorite from this. Mutatis Mutandis by Nona Hendrix. This is Let's Give Love a Try that we're listening to right now. Before that, we heard... All right. Let's work our way backwards. We heard Laura Nyro. Laura Nyro and LaBelle, It's Gonna Take a Miracle. That's the title cut. Before that, we heard Laura Nyro from New York Tenderberry. That was Save the Country. A little snippet. Before that, we heard Michael McElroy from the original cast recording of Blue. That was New York Nights, written by Nona Hendrix. Just so you know, most of these songs during this hour were written by Nona Hendrix. Before that, we heard The Talking Heads, The Great Curve, and Born Under Punches, both from Remain in Light. Nona Hendrix had sang backup on that, background vocals. Let's see, before that, we heard Nona Hendrix, The Ballad of Rush Limbaugh. That is from Mutatis Mutandis. M-U-T-A-T-I-S. Second word, M-U-T-A-N-D-I-S. Mutatis Mutandis. Woo! And before that, we heard what we're listening to right now, a little snippet of Let's Give Love a Try. Listen to a little more right now. You hurry up and finish so we can actually hear without my vocals on top of it. Nona Hendrix, Will You Be There, from Nona Hendrix. Before that, we heard a couple of LaBelle cuts. Sunshine, oops. Da-da-da-da-da. Which one was it? Oh, no. Oh, yeah, System, from Back to Now. And before that, we heard Sunshine Woke Me Up This Morning from Pressure Cooking. And before that, we were in the Mosaic Project Land, as was mentioned, Simply Beautiful was played before the Mosaic Project version. We heard the Al Green version from I'm Still in Love with You. Stay tuned for La Nueva Alternativa at 1 a.m. Next week, we'll be back. Not next week. We'll be back 2 weeks from now. We'll be back. What's our date? Oh, my gosh. October 6th? Oh, no. See, I meant to be ready for that. But, yeah, we'll be back the first Sunday in October with Fun Drive. Oh, no, not the first Sunday. The second Sunday. The World of Jazz will be here the first Sunday. We'll be here the second Sunday, and that'll be during the Fun Drive. And we're going to be presenting Pat Metheny. Yes, Pat Metheny. It's like, yay, Pat Metheny. So stay tuned to WBAI. Listen to this lovely institution. Help when you can, WBAI.org. Help during the drive. That'd be great, too. This is Joyce Jones signing off.
Hello, bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.